Tonight, we're going to take an adventure with George, KJ6VU, and dive into the Adventure Radio Protocol. Next on Live Free and Ham. Hello, and welcome to Live Free and Ham Podcast. It's our bi-weekly show where we explore ham radio topics in New Hampshire, New England, and beyond. So whether you're a regular listener or our first-time guest, we're excited to have you here and appreciate your support, and welcome. So let's get into today's show. I'm your host, Eric, call sign N1JUR, and my co-hosts that surround me are...
Todd, W1STJ.
Paul, KO4TBY.
I'm Ryan, W1SNH.
All right, and our special guest this evening is...
I'm George, KJ6VU.
All right, well, thank you for coming on, George. So before we get into the show, we always like to catch up. Our listeners know what's going on before we get into the show. But as always, every month we'll be hosting a live stream on our YouTube channel. And January is definitely moving pretty fast. So keep an eye on our socials and the livefreeandham.com website for more details so you can be part of that. And as always, the Road Less Traveled giveaway is still open, guys. We've had a few folks enter, but definitely want to give more people opportunity to get in on the action. And pick the dates when you think Todd and I might get our dual kilo. You can always head over to livefreeandham.com and click the banner on the homepage to register. And for our new segment, we are going to be kicking off.
And now for something a little extra with Todd, W1STJ.
All right. Yes. You heard a little something extra here, and we are going to help Todd get prepared to get his extra. You know, if you have been paying attention, there's a lot of other channels out there that are doing the extra before Easter over at the Ham Radio Clubhouse, and a bunch of others are all encouraging folks to get out there, get upgraded. Or maybe if you're sitting around, you know, deciding whether you want to get your technician, we invite you to come play along. So each week we are going to test Todd on his knowledge. And now over to our favorite VE quizmaster, Paul, go ahead and take it.
All right, Todd, this is Paul, KF4TPY. And I've got an easy run for you.
We'll see.
All right. There we go.
There we go.
All right.
All right. Which of the following amateur stations may transmit one-way communications? Is it A local repeater or linked repeater station? B, a message forwarding station or automatically controlled digital station? C, all these choices are correct. Or D, a space station, beacon station, or telecommand station?
I'm going to say D. All right. Got one right.
Nice job. Nice job.
Way to go. One,
two to go. We're equal with last week's episode.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Let's go.
For your second question, if a station in a message forwarding system inadvertently forwards a message that is in violation of FCC rules, who is primarily accountable for the rules violation? Is it A, the control operators of all the stations in the system? B, the control operator of the originating station? C, the control operators of all the stations in the system not authenticating the source from which they accept communications? Or is it D, the control operator of the packet bulletin board station?
B.
And B is correct.
Woo-hoo, two for two, Todd. Nice job.
Keep this momentum going.
I studied this chapter.
Oh, well, then there's no reason why you can't be 100.
All right, for the third and final question, and yes, these questions are all from the first chapter. With your transceiver displaying the carrier frequency of phone signals, you hear a DX station calling CQ on 3.601 megahertz lower sideband. Is it legal to return the call using a lower sideband on the same frequency? Is the answer A, yes, because the displayed frequency is within the 75 meter phone band segment? B, no, the sideband will extend beyond the edge of the phone band segment. C, no, U.S. stations are not permitted to use phone emissions below 3.610 megahertz. Or D, yes, because the DX station initiated the contact.
I don't remember this one. Let's see. Let me think about it for a sec. It's either A or C.
You gotta pick one.
Yeah, I know.
Phone a friend.
Yeah.
Can George help you?
You know, I don't remember how low it goes. Let's go with C.
Ooh. And
no. Now
we'll say it was partially correct.
Partially correct.
True.
Yeah. Correct. Yes. Answer is B, because the lower sideband would extend beyond the edge of the phone band segment.
Right.
Well, not bad. We did much better than we did last week.
Hey, 2 out of 3 ain't bad, right? Isn't that what Meatloaf said?
Much better than last week.
Very true, very true. All righty, well, that is it for our segment of the week with Now for Something Extra. So we're going to now dive into our Ham Radio Week as like we always do. So we always like to start the show by asking, what's your Ham Radio Week like? And because George is our guest here and the host of the Ham Radio Workbench, he always knows he gets missed. So George, what's been going on with your Ham Radio Week this week?
Yeah, Eric, that's the hard part about being the host. You know, you have to let everybody else go first, and there's never time for you, so I feel your pain. So a couple things. One is the Ham Radio Workbench podcast. We just turned our 200th episode, so we recorded that on Friday night. That will post.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That will post to the stream in a couple of weeks. We have a few more shows in the queue between now and then, so that'll come out in February. Another thing is working on some of the new boards for the Adventure Radio Protocol. We'll talk about that later. And the last thing is I've started to take a deeper dive into Arden. And Arden is very widely used here in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. And so I now have a router up and running on a tunnel to the rest of the Arden network and a bunch of IP phones and some computers and this and that up and running. Wow. At the house. So I hope to get a decent dish antenna soon and do a little field testing to get into some of the higher access points.
Well, it sounds like we're going to have you back on. That's kind of one of my interests in the New England area. I know we've got a big Ardent from the emergency side population, but yeah, I'd love to have you on back to talk about something like that. It'd be really fun.
Sure. I know nothing about it except I made it work. So
well, then you're in the perfect company because none of us know anything about it either. So yeah. We'll all learn together. So cool. All right. Well, that's awesome. Good to see that you know, someone's very knee deep in ham radio projects. So without further ado, going back to the CDO approach, you know, Paul, what's going on in your ham week?
Oh, well, I certainly didn't have as busy a week as George, I guess, but I played with some Ion 2G ALE. It's been an ongoing trying to get it all working right. Myself and a couple of the officers in the Flag and Torch Society have been playing with that. And other than the Ion 2 2G ALE, it's just been trying to figure out XLX reflector stuff and getting DMR to Fusion crossover and you know, getting all that working. And it's certainly been a week of learning for sure.
Wow, very cool. Nice. All right, well, without further ado, Ryan, what's been going on in your ham radio week?
Yeah, so I got kind of two things cooking. One, I've been I want to bring my Go box up to version 2.0. so I had ordered from a Halibut Electronics, his interconnect standard equipment. And I thought it'd be a great addition to the Go box so that whoever walks up at field day can plug in and utilize it. So right now it's more of a space hardware constraint. So I'm pulling the box apart and bending new support brackets and everything else to make it fit. So that should be a nice project to work on. And then actually, New England is filled with a lot of old mill buildings. And I found this company online that still is operational that does a special workbench construction for a lot of the manufacturing in the area. And they have this one model for a tech workbench. So I kind of sized it out for my little office down here and put out a quote to them, kind of figure out, will the budget be within budget and make it reasonable, or am I just kind of wishful thinking? But I like their project their product, and it'd be pretty neat to put in the shack here. So
that'd be really cool. Nice. Yep. So is it like a very like the traditional solid metal style desks, or is it more of a modular?
Yeah, no, it's a metal, but back to the OCD, it'd have proper place for the soldering iron and the O-scope and, magnifying glass and good light, and it'd be really nice. So,
so you don't have the limitation that George has per se on his workbench, where he only has like 6 to 8 inches to work with at the specific levels. I remember that whole episode. You went into like the very detail. They're like, my gosh, I'm lucky I have like a foot and a half of distance between my monitor and my desk. So it's pretty cool.
No, but it would just help organize everything, and I think it'd be a good long-term investment. So what I've been doing this past week.
All right, cool. All right, Todd, well, without further ado, since Ryan's already on GoBox 2.0, we've got to get your GoBox 1.0 off the ground. But anyway, what's been going on your workbench? Your workbench. See, I'm already doing it. What's been going on your hem week?
Ryan, I have a lot of vacation time I have to take because I'm maxed out. So I'd be glad to come over and observe you and maybe work on my GoBox
absolutely.
While you're making 2.0. Maybe we can get my 1.0 going. nothing much ham radio. I was before I lost my computer. They did tell me they were going to have it done by the end of the week, and that didn't happen. But using this little app on my phone, which seems to be working pretty well, I was messing around with profiles on my Flex. So I made a single sideband profile on for each band. So that's pretty cool, because when you go from FT8, it messes everything up, and then you got to adjust everything, and it takes a while. Now I can just press a button, just click on it, and I can go to 20 meters, 10 meters. So I was learning how to do that. And what I did learn, which was kind of cool, is that when you do it on the Flex radio, it also translates to your portable. So like when I'm doing my iPad, the settings are already there. So it does go back and forth. So it's pretty cool. So I'm still working on it. I've been watching some videos, and there's a lot more I can do. I just did the very basic, but it's pretty simple, and it works really well. So like if you're on FT8 and you want to switch to sideband and I want to go to 20 meters, I just go into the profiles and select 20 meters, and all my settings for my 20 meter band is good to go.
So Todd, are you integrating your Stream Deck with that? Switching back and forth?
Well, I haven't figured that out yet. That's the other thing I'm working on is Stream Deck. I've got I'm at the very basic levels. That's kind of like with my extra studying. I'm at the very basics. I'm about 3/4 of the way through my audio book. So I'm working on it. But I am going to try to figure that out too. I'm still working on the Stream Deck. I can do the very basics. So I've just been messing around and seeing how things go. So it's but not a lot of operating. It's been kind of cold this week, so I was planning on doing a POTA. I was going to try to go the rail trail, but it's just been kind of too cold. Mm-hmm. Don't want to go out there and freeze. So it's
supposed to warm up. We are in a deadline, though.
I know, but it's getting warmer, and I'm like, oh, it's good. But then I look at the weather; it's going to be like raining and snowing and icing. So that's not good either. So we'll see.
Very cool. All right. Well, for my ham radio week, I Can't say I spent a whole lot of time during the week doing ham radio, but I think this weekend I literally drowned in contests. This weekend was Support Your Parks weekend, was New Hampshire North America CUSO party. There was some contest going on 10 meters. The bands were crazy busy. And so I kind of dabbled a little bit in both FT8 and doing a lot of sideband contacts on 10, picking up some stations that I don't normally hear. So that was definitely fun. And just like Todd, I was, we'll say, flexing a little bit, and my wife had a lot of, they will say, errands. And so I was driving the official chauffeur driving around. So, you know, what better than to start working some, you know, contacts off the iPhone and whatnot. And that just for me is always a pure joy when I can, you know, still play radio without not having to dream about playing radio when I get home. So it's a great, great fun. And we all get a chance to benefit from that, I'm sure. So we'll eventually, you know, have a GoFundMe going, and we'll have to get Paul, you know, into the flex world eventually. He is the only one that's not a flex owner. So
The mighty Team ICOM.
So. He is. Yes. He has to support such a heavy burden on his shoulders.
Well, the question is, will he get a flex before I get my extra?
Oh, I don't know what that,
that would be a good, that'd probably be a good bet. Cause I'm not sure.
Well, if anybody wants to help contribute to that, we have a Patreon and a Buy Us a Beer link, so feel free. We'll make sure that all of the proceeds go to Paul for that one. And, you know, get him towards the flex world. So, cool. All right.
Be the live free and ham flex.
Yeah, true. Community, we'll have to figure out a remote place to put that up. I know a couple places in Maine that are definitely well worth it. So, cool. All right. Well, so we've got a great guest on tonight, George, as we introduced KJ6VU. He's the host of Ham Radio Workbench, and he's on to talk about tonight something very specific that we all, you know, have learned and want to hear more about, called the Adventure Radio Protocol. You know, so, but before we kind of dive into that, we always like to hear from our esteemed guests, you know, a little bit about their ham radio story, you know, and how they got to where they are. And we always, you know, that, you know, one of my favorite podcasts that I always have on the, you know, the pod there is the Ham Radio Workbench. And so if you haven't heard of it, then, you know, as the saying goes, you got a lot of grass to mow. So, you know, make sure, you know, you get that into your, you know, playlist there and start playing catch up. But anyway, over to you, George. So, you know, go ahead, tell us a little bit about what's going on and you know, your ham radio story a bit.
Sure. Thanks, Eric. By the way, I really appreciate you offering to bring me on and chit chat with you guys about Adventure Radio and a bunch of other stuff. So thank you for that. I appreciate it. It's nice to see everybody tonight. So I guess my ham background, I started out as a novice when there were such things. I got my novice ticket back in 1972, which means I just passed my 50th anniversary as a ham a couple years ago. I can't believe it.
Wow.
So in that period, I've done a lot of different ham radio things. So I started out as a novice. You know, you can only operate CW. So CW was one of my favorite modes. It still is. As I like to say, I love CW, but it doesn't love me back. So I find it, it's a difficult, exhausting mode for me to operate, but I think it's probably my favorite. I just love the idea of CW, and I like the radios, and so that's that. And for someone who does a podcast, I don't like to talk on the radio a lot, so I'd prefer to talk with my fingers, you know, with a key or a keyboard, and not like barking into the microphone. Strangely enough, so did that. I got my technician license and got into FM and repeaters in the late 70s, and had a membership in a really cool club building a lot of link repeater systems. And there are a lot of fantastic mentors that taught me a lot about repeaters and radio technology. And so anyway, moved up to eventually get my extra. But I mostly do a lot of building. I'm not a big operator. My favorite operating event's field day. I love doing field day, but because that's like it's a camp out with radio. What could be better, you know?
Well, so that's, and you've got a very special, you know, setup there too, in terms of your mobile, you know, command center too.
Yeah, that's a whole other show. So I built a radio trailer about 3 or 4 years ago, which is, by the way, going to make an appearance in a week at Winter Field Day at the local club.
Oh, wow.
So
awesome.
there'll be a lot of rain. So at least we'll be inside. It'll be dry. So that's cool. I did a lot of repeater building. I do a lot of electronic stuff. So for work, I've been in the electronics business my whole career in embedded systems design, and went from being an engineer into more businessy kind of roles at software companies that make tools to do electronic design. So if you're going to make an integrated circuit, you need all kinds of fancy software to make that work. And so that was the industry that I worked in for several decades. So along the way, on the side, I also produced a couple different ham radio products. So they're very niche-y. So I've got a company called Sierra Radio that makes repeater control systems. We basically make them almost on demand. They're really, there's a whole story there, but it's not like a big business where we sell a ton of things. It's very specialized. And then I also have a little company called Pactena, and we make portable HF antennas. So my two big interests, as you could tell, is portable operating and repeater systems are probably the two areas of my greatest focus, which is kind of
impossible to get Pactena.
Yeah.
I know, right? It's unobtainium at this point.
Yeah, you got to know somebody.
Hey, George, you know somebody?
I can hook you up. Yep.
Excellent.
Yeah. And the story behind, you know, why are we so poor as business people? We can't possibly keep inventory. And the answer, the excuse over COVID was, well, supply chain, which is partly true, by the way.
Sure.
Today, that's not an issue. The problem is, that over the last year I moved from California to Oregon. And so that just put a big, you know, wrench in the works. So now we're kind of digging our way out of that. And we've got some things are in inventory. We still have a few more things to get back. But you know, the funny thing is when you start your own little business, you think, well, I'd want this. Who else would want this? And then, you know, people buy it and you go, well, that must be everybody on the planet who's ever going to want to buy this thing. And then more people are interested if you're lucky. And so we've been lucky and there's been a lot of interest, but it's always a challenge to make enough stuff. Good problem to have.
Yeah, definitely.
For sure.
Cool. All right. Well, so awesome. I'm very much in the market of getting a Pactena. So I think we'll have to have a conversation off to the side there, but you know, overall, you know, it's good to hear, you know, you started a novice. I know my background goes back to like 91, 92. So I sort of share in that same, you know, I'm 30 years old. So, you know, you know, you've got a little bit more years on me, but definitely a lot more experience for sure. And you know, your background just in general electronics, just, you know, totally blows my mind. I mean, I did a little bit in high school and, you know, more software on my side, so it's always good to see, you know, that whole mix and being able to make that stuff work is just totally, you know, it blows all of our minds here. We're just kind of all like, you know, in awe of you know, people would be able to create stuff like that and be able to just you know, get it working. So we applaud you on that one. So you know, so let's kind of talk a little bit about around the Adventure Protocol. So you kind of what led you towards this to get going, and then, you know, let's kind of dive in and level set a little bit of, you know, what the Adventure Protocol is and you know, get into the nuts bolts a little bit.
Yeah, sure. So not surprising. I mean, it's some of the things I mentioned, the things I've always been interested in kind of converged to this project. So independent of radio, I've always liked hiking and backpacking and did that since I was a teenager. I've hiked a lot of the Sierras in California, where I live most of my life.
Wow.
And not in the Sierras, but hiked in the Sierras and backpacked and all that. And, you know, and being a ham and hiking, you know, you think, well, I should take my radio. Now, for most of the years that I did that, it was not really practical because, the radios were big and they were power hungry and it just wasn't going to work. You know, nowadays, of course, there's so many fantastic low power QRP radios. I mean, now it's just amazing that you can take with you. So anyway, I've done a lot of repeater building. I've designed and built a lot of repeater control systems. And also I'm very interested in using radio in the out of doors. And so there is a standard that's been around for a long time called the Wilderness Protocol. And the Wilderness Protocol basically says, you can listen in on a couple different frequencies on the hour four times a day if you have an emergency call to make. And I always thought that was kind of a terrible method, honestly. I'll share some slides. You know, it's kind of like, it was a good thought, but it wasn't a very good, you know, detailed implementation. So the long story short is I felt that it would be really useful if there was a standard around where you could hang out on the air and find other people who are doing other outdoorsy activities, so you can find them and talk to them, whether it's just for a conversation or making a soda contact or even an emergency, if you had some common place to find people on the band and you had some signaling method to actually indicate you were there or that you have some traffic. So that kind of got me down the path of defining what I came to call the Adventure Radio Protocol. Which I can go into in more detail, but that's essentially the background. And, you know, it's like a lot of things. You start thinking about a problem and you go, oh, you know, it'd be great if there was just a frequency where people would hang out. And then it's like, well, better than just a frequency, what if there's a way to like alert people? Because I don't want to listen all day long. And, you know, I don't want to leave the radio on blasting in my office for people just chit-chatting. But if somebody has an emergency or whatever, it'd be great to have some way to indicate that. And then on it went from there. And so there's sort of feature creep set in until it turned into what is defined as the Adventure Radio Protocol.
Oh, very cool. So you could get a little kind of small slide presentation. So we can kind of dive into that if that's the direction you kind of want to go and talk a little bit more and just give people a better understanding. Because I found it very, you know, you were on Josh Ham Radio Crash Course's show a while back, and we can link to that video, you know, in terms of talking a little bit about. But we figured, you know, for our audience and whatnot, what better than just, you know, if you haven't heard about this and you know, you want to learn more about it, this is perfect, you know, to kind of go, you know, into a little bit more detail here. So we'll kick off the presentation there and let you kind of go from there.
Sure thing. So it's a little bit easier to kind of go through the detail, and there's some graphics and stuff. So we'll just kind of go through here, and please ask questions as we go. So so first of all, let's talk about what was the point of all this? What was the problem that I was trying to solve? Number one, make it easier for radio operators to find and communicate with each other. Because after all, if you go hiking and you take your handy talkie with you, for example, and you don't coordinate with somebody else a frequency to meet on, well, where would you be? Maybe on the local repeater. What if you're in a valley? What if you're in a place where there's no repeater coverage? Wouldn't it be nice if there is a watering hole where you can meet? So that would be helpful. The second thing is we want to be able to support multiple scenarios, maybe an emergency call or just getting information, or to rally around on-air activities like SOTA, POTA, and other kinds of on-the-air activities, especially on the VHF and UHF bands. And also, while we're at it, it'd be nice if we had a method to signal to other people that there's something going on if they're not even actively monitoring the radio. So that's an important aspect of this, trying to be very practical. So what do you need? So there's really three things you need, in my opinion, to kind of pull this off. The first thing is you have to have a place on the band. You know, you have to have a common frequency to hang out on. The second thing is you need to have a way to signal what's going on. And in the case of this, I proposed that we used PL tones or CTCSS tones for this purpose. And there's good a reason for that. And that is that every radio supports it. So if you think about what's available on most radios, it's either PL encode decode or DTMF are the only signaling methods. And the problem with DTMF is that not every radio supports it. Because if you go by any ICOM handy talkie today, does not have a DTMF pad on it. So your $500 beautiful ID50 whatever handy talkie does not have a tone pad. You can pre-program memory channels with specific tone sequences, but that's cumbersome and it's not adequate. So DTMF is kind of not, is would be a good candidate, but it's really not the best thing. So the only thing is PL or CTCSS. And the other thing that's an advantage of that is there are several tones, and every radio, whether it's a $10 Chinese radio or a $500 Motorola radio or a $500 ICOM or Yaesu or whatever, they all do tone encode decode. So that is the common technology that they all share. The other thought is there's really at least two ways this could be done. One way, or mode, if you will, is radio-to-radio communications. In other words, you don't need any infrastructure. I can take any handy-talkie that I own, and Eric, you can take any handy-talkie you own, and we can agree on a common frequency, and then we could use tones to signal each other under various circumstances we'll get to in a moment here. So we don't need to buy anything. I mean, there's nothing you need to buy to make this work to start with. In addition to that, if you do want to make it a little bit more sophisticated and add infrastructure, you could do that. And well, what infrastructure would that be? And that's going to be remote sites like repeaters or remotely controlled base stations that could be listening for traffic, could be added to a network to make it even more useful. And we'll talk about those use cases here in a moment. Awesome. So far, so good?
Yeah, right. Clear. I mean, in essence, it sounds good so far.
So what's the current method for doing anything close to this? The closest thing is called the Wilderness Protocol, as I mentioned. And basically, the Wilderness Protocol says you have to, first of all, be actually listening to the radio. Otherwise, you'll never get the message. Second thing is the calling party will be on one of five frequencies. They're the most commonly used simplex frequencies on 6 meters up to 23 centimeters. So 146.52, 446.0, 223.5, et cetera. So right away, this protocol says you could be on one of five frequencies. Now, the reality is probably 90% of the time you're going to pick 146.52. So maybe it's not a real big problem, but it doesn't help that there's five to choose from. Mm-hmm. The next part about the Wilderness Protocol that's kind of not great is they recommend making calls at four specific times of the day, at 7 in the morning, 10 in the morning, 1 p.m. and 4 p.m. on the hour for the first 5 minutes.
Where did they come up with that? Was that like the most common used time in most area? You know, it's kind of odd.
I don't know. Whoever wrote this just made it up. I mean, they thought, well, this seems to make sense. So let's put that down. So what this means is if you were going to make a call, you have to make a call on the hour at one of those four times, or maybe nobody's listening. Now, the more kind of ridiculous part of this is it means somebody has to be listening on one of those five frequencies, those four times of the day actively to hear the call.
Right.
Like, what are the odds? So that's kind of the setup of why the current Wilderness Protocol is really not sufficient.
And 9 times out of 10, like around at least the 5-2 around here tends to be very much an emergency call frequency. And so it's very like get in, get off quick. And no one really, spends a whole lot of time doing that. Go ahead, Ryan. You got a question?
Yeah. Well, no, I was just going to say we can circle back to this, my comment here later after George is finished. But we just recently introduced, interviewed two gentlemen who kind of this whole scenario played out for them. And they were using tones over a point-to-point frequency because they were injured and got stuck out in the wilderness and they needed help. So it was a real life example that I think this would help
apply well.
So here's a very simple example along the lines of what you're saying, Ryan. If we agreed that 5-2 is going to be the calling frequency, but which by the way, it's not for my proposal, but let's just pick that as the channel. In order for you to make a call to somebody and say, hey, I broke my leg, I need a hand. Somebody else has to be listening like 24 hours a day to that frequency. Now, maybe in the case of 5-2, in certain areas, that is the case, but maybe not. If you are on the receiving end of that emergency call, that means you got to leave your radio on all the time. So if we just said, look, if nothing else, if we just agreed on a particular PL tone that would be an alert tone, in my proposal, by the way, I picked 67 hertz arbitrarily. Could have been anything. It's the first tone on the stack, so it's furthest away from what most people use. So if we just said, look, you can chit-chat all you want all day long on 5-2 simplex, but if anybody shows up with encoding 67 hertz, that means that they're trying to get a hold of somebody for help. Now, what that means for me is my radio at home, I could leave on 24/7 decoding 67 hertz. I'll never hear anything. I won't hear the chit-chat, but I will hear that person making the emergency call. So that's right. the most basic use case for the Adventure Radio Protocol. The second tone signaling technique that you could find that's been used a little bit, not a whole lot, is called a LITS tone. And LITS stands for long tone zero. So the idea here was that you'd have a DTMF tone decoder on your repeater system and or maybe on a box on your home radio. And it listens for the DTMF zero tone, but it has to be present for at least about 10 seconds for this to trigger. Now, this gets back to the good old days of when we had DTMF pads. Okay, that would work. But again, my $500 ICOM radio doesn't have one of those. And even if you programmed a zero into the memory, it can't send it for 10 seconds. It can send it for like 200 milliseconds. So,
and most repeaters these days aren't, they auto patches are kind of a thing of the past. I mean, no one's really, you know, making phone calls like they used to on their commute home to tell their wife that they're, you know, stuck in traffic.
Well, this doesn't really have anything to do with it, with an auto patch, because a repeater to be legal has to have positive control, meaning there has to be a way to remotely turn it on and off in the case that the transmitter gets stuck, for example. So it's going to have a DTMF decoder probably anyway. So there are a lot of repeater controllers which implement LITs as a decoded function. But it's not practical, again, for a bunch of reasons, including most handy talkies can't send it. So that's kind of the downside there. The other downside to Wilderness or Protocol or even the LITS thing is that these are really like emergency call signaling kind of techniques. But there's a bunch of other use cases that would be nice to support that are not emergencies. In fact, if this was never used for an emergency, that would be okay. And what I'm thinking about are things like POTA or SOTA. So different parts of the country, Ryan, you're talking about 5.2, different parts of the country use 146.5.2 and have different conventions. So some parts of the country, 5.2, well, everywhere it's the calling channel, but in some areas it's inappropriate to rag chew on 5.2. There's other parts of the country where they love to have you rag chew on 5.2 because otherwise nobody would be using the frequency. And you'll find these in different pockets. And I've lived in different pockets where there's been different conventions. So for things like SOTA activations, having a different frequency that would be the common hangout for doing, let's say, SOTA activations on VHF, which is not 5.2, would be a good thing. So today, there is no other frequency designated for that purpose. So the Wilderness Protocol will define a frequency, and that would be perfectly usable for making contacts like SOTA and POTA contacts. And in fact, it's encouraged to use that frequency for that kind of stuff. That way you completely get off of 5.2. So, right. so anyway, there's other use cases as well. So my main point here is emergencies are one thing, but non-emergencies, just chit-chat, is useful also. So if I go hiking by myself, I take my handy talkie, I'll put it on the adventure frequency and listen there and maybe scan 5.2 also. But I otherwise I wouldn't know what other frequency to listen to.
Okay, cool. Sounds
all right, good. So the proposal for the frequency that I'm suggesting is 146.58. Now, for our friends outside of North America, they're going to say, well, hang on, over here in Germany or the UK, we don't even have that as a frequency. So they have 144.146. So that means that in other regions, like region one, they would have to come up with their own frequency for that region. So this is really a North America proposal for this, for the, as far as the frequency goes, the rest is applicable. So why 146.58? Well, to some degree, it's arbitrary. 2 meters is probably the best band, both from a propagation and everybody's got a 2 meter radio, right? Of course, UHF would be the second best choice, but there's another reason to pick 2 meters. And that is if you pick 2 meters for this and UHF for your local repeaters, then they actually play together very nicely. So, right. So then the question is, well, like why 5.8? And I'll go into that in a moment, but mainly the point is not to use 5.2 because we don't want to irritate people who have particular ways they want to use 5.2 in their region. So it takes the traffic off to another frequency and doesn't bother anybody on 5.2.
Okay, now
why 5.8? Why not 146.46 or some other thing? Well, first of all, you want to pick a official simplex frequency, not an oddball, you know, somewhere tucked away in the corner of the band. What you'll find is that the frequency coordination process is pretty different in different regions. So every region's got a frequency coordinator. Sometimes they coordinate for one state, sometimes multiple states. Sometimes in California, there's two frequency coordination regions. So we actually have two states, not one from that perspective. And the band plans don't always agree. So you want to find a frequency that exists in all of the band plans in all of the areas of the country. So that starts to knock out some of the frequencies. So we don't want to use like 146.4 because it could be a repeater frequency. 146.52, we talked about, we don't want to use it. So there's others that we could pick. 146.46 would be a good choice. 146.58 would be a good choice, et cetera. Now, the downside to picking any one of these frequencies is that every time I give this presentation, somebody says, hang on.
Pipes up.
no matter what frequency you picked, you'll hear the next phrase, which is, that frequency is used by fill in the blank. You know, 146.58 is used by the, Podunk Hollow Aries Club. You know, it's like, well, okay, so there is no frequency I could possibly pick that somebody wouldn't say, well, hang on. Okay.
Right.
Those simplex frequencies are not coordinated, so they're kind of all fair game. And you don't want to interfere with people, of course. But the fact of the matter is that even whatever frequency you pick, and even if some group of people use it, it's not like a repeater where it's there all the time.
Right.
And they're not actively using that frequency all the time. By the way, if they are using that frequency, especially for some emergency, well, then you shouldn't be using the wilderness, or excuse me, the adventure radio thing anyway. You know, you should like take your soda operation somewhere else while they're doing their drill or whatever they're doing. You know, be polite. So, right. So there could have been a few other choices, but I zeroed in on 58. Now, it turns out, weirdly enough, after I settled on that frequency, it turns out that there's parts of the country where they're actually using 146.58 for outdoors kind of activities. Here in Oregon, a lot of the soda ops were already using that frequency.
Oh, wow.
Coincidence. Okay. There's other groups in other parts of the country that are using it as an overlanding frequency. So if you're out in your four-wheel drive truck, you know, camping or whatever, it's a pretty common frequency for that sort of thing. So it kind of reinforced that wasn't a bad guess. So I'm not tied to that. If there is a good reason to pick another frequency, that's fine. But I would stick with that at this point. I haven't heard a good argument to do something different. The other thing I would resist is the temptation to have different regions you pick different frequencies. So, you know, that's suboptimum, because if you go to another part of the country, it's nice to know, you know, what frequency
that's the same across the board, right? Yeah,
we're just like APRS. You know, you don't want 20 different APRS channels. Okay,
yeah, for sure.
So let's get into the signaling thing. So the Electronic Industry Association (EIA) defined 32 standard CTCSS tones or PL tones, and a lot of radios will, of course, not only support those 32 tones, but additional tones at the edges, typically in addition to that. So I would stick with the 32 tones. That means there's 32 different indications we can have. If you encode one of those 32 PL tones, it means something. So you can have 32 different messages, if you will. And I think we should resist the temptation to overload this. And I think we want to keep it as simple as possible. And so the idea was, what is the smallest number of PL tones that we could identify that have a specific use case and try to limit it to that? And in fact, some of these may not even be used in an area. So the proposal has the following tones pre-assigned. 67 hertz means that there's an emergency in process. In other words, I need to get a hold of somebody. Now, I don't want to get too legalistic about what's an emergency. You know, if you feel that something is urgent enough to reach out to other people to interrupt them to tell them I need something, need some help, then go for it. You know, so it's not like a 911 call. But, you know, your emergency might be, I broke my leg. My emergency might be, I'm out of ice. So you can decide, you know, where that line is. 77 hertz is a ping. We'll come back to what that means. 88.5 means I have an on-air activity like Soda Poda or some other Oda, and I'm making active calls.
And in terms of the PL, so like in terms of Poda, would it be one of those channels or that this frequency would be for, you know, calling CQ Poda? Is that kind of what the intention on that PL?
Okay. Yeah, the idea would be, let's say I'm out on a hike and I'm setting up to do my soda activation. I would listen on 146.58 to make sure there's no traffic there, you know, being polite. Mm-hmm. And if there's no traffic, then I would say, hey, CQ Poda or CQ Soda, CQ Soda. And I'd be encoding 88.5 hertz while I'm doing that. And then I would actually conduct my soda activation or Poda activation on that frequency. It's not to call and then move off. It's, you know, you're already moved off the national calling channel. You might as well stay there. And by encoding 88.5, what that signals is if anybody else is monitoring, If they're decoding 88.5 hertz, their radio will be silent until they hear me calling for contacts. So again, if you want to encourage use of the channel, you want to have people be able to chit-chat back and forth, but I, as a hunter, may not want to listen to, hey, Bob, bring some more ice back to camp. But as soon as you get on the air calling CQ POTA, I want to hear that. So I'll just set my radio to decode 88 so I can selectively tune out everything else.
Nice. Okay.
100 would be for general rag chew, like, you know, just trail chat. This is a good place to say we need more ice. And 123 would trigger an automated response from some kind of infrastructure, which is in the same vein as 77. And we'll talk about that in a little bit more. So you can use 67, 88, and 100 right now on your radio. Just pre-program them into three channels, all the same frequency. Each channel is a different tone, and you're good to go. There is a question about should the radio, let's say your handy talkie, be only encoding or encoding and decoding as well?
Right. I was going to ask that.
Yeah. And the answer is, well, it depends on what you want to do. You know, do you want to filter everything else out but one thing, or do you want to listen to all traffic? Personally, I would only encode while I'm on the trail because I want to hear everything that's going on in the channel. Mm-hmm. If you want to set up your radio at home to only listen for emergencies, then you set PL decode for 67 and you don't hear anything unless there's an emergency, et cetera. So whether you choose to have decode or not is totally up to your use case.
And ultimately, it's pretty flexible in the sense of, you know, where you're mobile and or, you know, HT or, you know, base station. So, yeah, I like that. That's definitely good structure.
So this is what up to here. We can stop here and go, OK, we'll declare victory. That's the protocol. There's a frequency defined. There's a couple PL tones for emergency and non-emergency. We're done. So you can just go with that and we're good. Now, for me personally, having built a lot of repeaters and stuff like that, I think, well, wait a minute. We're just getting warmed up. Because what would be really useful is if we would extend the functionality to include some more automated alerting systems. And what better way to do that than have repeater systems or other remote receivers be monitoring for some of this traffic, especially the emergency tone.
Okay.
So let's move forward a little bit. So let me talk about 77 and 123 hertz. Now, to build infrastructure, and for example, the repeater that I have here in the Willamette Valley, it's a UHF repeater, and we're adding a 2-meter remote base receiver, transceiver, to that repeater on 2 meters. It'll be on 146.58, and it'll be listening for these various kinds of tones. Now, you can build a control system that listens for these different tones, and depending on the tone it hears, it'll take some appropriate action. So, How would this actually be built? So normally a repeater, let's say a UHF repeater, has a receiver and a transmitter. The RF side goes into a duplexer up the feed line to the antenna. The radios also talk to a control system, which takes the receive audio and processes it and puts it back into the transmitter, listens for carrier. And when it hears a carrier or a tone, then it turns on the transmitter and repeats the audio. So what would be adding to that is a second radio. Let's say like a Motorola CDM 1500 series. It's a perfect radio for this. It's industrial strength, easy to program, get to all the signals. You buy them for $100 on eBay. That radio could be connected to the control system, and that radio needs to have a special controller between the radio and the regular repeater that listens for these various PL tones. And you could build it yourself. You can just take the protocol and go build your own hardware. Or I'm building a controller that'll do this. And we'll talk about that in a second here. So let me talk about it from a user point of view. Wouldn't it be cool? You go on a trail, you're hiking along. One question I would have is what kind of range do I have? Can other people hear me simplex? In which case I can make a call, you know, with, let's say, 100 hertz, the normal chit-chat tone. But I would love to know if in this area that maybe I've never been to, if there are any repeaters in this area that could hear my signal. Now, the repeaters are not on 146.58 normally. They're on another channel. But I need a way to alert them. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to set the radio for 123 hertz, press the button, transmit a carrier for a second, and unkey and see if anything happens. So the way it works is the remote base or the repeater remote-based radio listens on this frequency, listens for all these different tones. If it hears 123 hertz, that is a signal to the controller to send a message back to the person on 2 meters. And that could be something like playing a wave file. So I could record a wave file that says, you've reached the New Hampshire Repeater Club Mount blah, blah, repeater site. We're on 440.5 megahertz PL100. You know, some canned message. That little canned message could live in a Raspberry Pi that's sitting in your controller. And when the controller says, oh, I heard 123 hertz, it turns on the 2 meter transmitter and plays that wave file. Simple as that. Now, what's cool about that is if you have access to the repeater, you can even send it different wave messages like weather alerts, or, you know, it could change every day, you know, what message you're sending. So it's analogous to APRS, where in APRS, you can see the stations that are on in the area. So you know what you can connect to.
Ultimately, kind of as a repeater owner, you could trigger up a bunch of stated messages or pre-canned messages as a store and forward system for, you know, hikers in the area, for, you know, weather reports that they can just key up at a moment's notice.
Exactly. And when that happens, by the way, if I'm listening to the UHF repeater, I never hear any of this. It just happens in the background because I'm not connecting directly to the repeater at that point.
This is a great idea. I'm already sold.
Oh, but wait, there's more.
Yeah,
there's more.
So let's say the other example of a behavior could be somebody transmits with 67 hertz. So I don't just want a message to come back to say, congratulations, there's a repeater here. Good luck with your emergency, right? I mean, that's not very useful. What I want to do in this case is I actually want the audio from that 2 meter receiver that had the 67 hertz into it. I want that to light up my UHF repeater. And so if I'm listening to the UHF repeater, I don't hear anything until somebody comes in on the 2 meter repeater with the right tone. Then I can hear that voice coming out the UHF repeater and say, hey, this is Bob W1ABC. I have a problem. Could someone help me out? And then on the UHF repeater, you can go back and go into transmit mode and then transmit back on 2 meters to that person with their handy talkie who has the problem. So now you're using your 2 meter radio. It's a remote base on your UHF repeater. That's really, I think, where it's powerful. The other thing but wait, there's one more thing. What are the odds that you're listening to the repeater 24 hours a day? Probably zero, right? So maybe I'm lucky to hear the call because I was listening, but maybe not. If my repeater is connected to, has an internet connection, and let's say I detect 67 hertz, in addition to turning on the connection to the repeater to pass the audio, I can have that little Raspberry Pi or whatever computer I'm using send me a text message. In fact, I could have a list of 20 people that when it hears an emergency call, these 20 people all get a text message. So the beauty of this is I don't ever have to listen to my repeater, but I may get a text that says there's emergency traffic on 146.58. So I may turn on my VHF radio or turn on the repeater and then turn the remote base on and listen and see what's going on. So I think this is really where the Wilderness Protocol kind of poops out, because there's no, you know, how many of us listen 24 hours a day? Like nobody. But if, you know, if at 3 a.m. or even 3 p.m. you have a problem, I want to be able to get through. So that's really where I think the power of this kind of idea starts to come into play.
Yeah, that there sounds so many more, you know, kind of rabbit holes as you could go down into terms of offering a lot more automation around of, you know, notifying folks and not having to, you know, have someone staffed, which is, you know, as you said, it's just almost impossible to do. And even as a ham radio operators ourselves, we just don't spend time, you know, in front of our radios every, you know, day like we used to.
You couldn't do it 24 hours a day, no matter what. So yeah, exactly. By the way, the other thing that's cool about this is if I could provide the basics of making this work, then people can take it and make it their own. So if I can provide you a way to indicate that there's some traffic on the frequency, a particular tone, you can do whatever you want. I mean, I'm just suggesting the remote based transceive thing or the texting, or, you know, you can, I'm sure other people look at this and come up with 10 other things that are really cool. That they might want to do. So that's the essential idea. So before I got too excited about published publishing the spec for all this, I wanted to actually make sure that you could actually build a thing and make it work. So the point is that the protocol definition is published. That's just out in the public domain. Anybody can build the hardware. But since I built a lot of repeater controllers, and it basically uses the same kind of stuff you put in a repeater controller, I just went ahead and built a controller to do this. So again, this is only if you're using it in the infrastructure mode, not the radio to radio mode. You don't need any of this stuff. So if you're a repeater owner and you want to add this feature to your repeater besides the radio itself, you need a piece of hardware that sits in between that radio and the rest of the repeater system. So I made this little board here. It's about 4 by 6-ish inches. And it does everything that we talked about already. So basically, it listens to a receiver signal. It scans for all the PL tones. When it detects a PL tone, it either takes an action or reports what tone was decoded to an external device like a computer. There's a little LCD you can put on there to actually see what it says if you like. It sends the data over a serial port that could go to a Raspberry Pi or whatever computer you got. There's some GPIO triggers to trigger an event on the Raspberry Pi. The board also has a DTMF decoder built into it. Even though DTMF is not part of the protocol, you could add non-essential functionality beyond the PL tone signaling by adding DTMF if you want to. The only downside is not everybody could use it because, again, $500 icon, not every radio. Use it. But for the other half of the radios out there that do have DTMF pads, you could add additional functionality. Wow. So that's all built into this board. But of course, feature creep doesn't stop there.
Not with George.
By the way, one other thing I want to mention. This board, when I wrote the firmware for the board to do the ARP stuff, and once that was all up and running, I thought, you know, I actually need a repeater controller for my repeater. So I added a bunch of other functionality because all the hardware to make a single port controller is in here to make a repeater controller. To do a repeater controller, you need PL decoding, which most controllers, by the way, don't have. You need PL decoding, you need DTMF decoding, you need PL filtering, you need audio mixing, you need level setting, you need CWID, all that stuff. And so I added all that code into this. So there's a dip switch on this board. When you power up the board, if the dip switch is in one position, it comes up as an adventure radio controller. If you power it up in the other position, it comes up as a repeater controller. Wow. So there's no difference in the hardware. All the firmware for both is built in, so you don't have to change the firmware. It just changes its personality when it boots up. Okay, so that was that was that. So the next thing is, well, that project kind of done, but I want to add the Raspberry Pi to this. So I thought, well, actually, what I really need to do is make this multi-ported. So I designed a 3-port motherboard. So I don't have a photograph on it, but you can see it here. So this is a 3-port motherboard. The idea is that normally you use this by itself. You just stick this in a box and off you go. But if you want 3 ports, you can take this guy and you can mount it to the big.
Oh, right on that board.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so you can see
there's
four big or three big squares here. Each one of those squares, you can plug in another one of these ARP controllers. So if you set the first one as maybe as repeater controller mode, you have another one. You set that as ARP controller mode. You're good to go. That's everything you need. Your repeater and your remote base are all there, ready to go. You don't even need a repeater controller because this becomes it. And then there's a third port. That third port could be another one of these ARP controllers, maybe to hook up your All-Star computer to that port. So you got repeater, you got 2-meter remote base, you got All-Star.
One package, yeah.
And to do that, you need a Raspberry Pi. So there's a Raspberry Pi host adapter board. So that's a standard Pi. It's sitting on top of another board, which is essentially the same size as the other one. So you could put a Raspberry Pi in any one of these slots also. So it kind of gives you maximum flexibility.
A quick hardware question for you. Is the Raspberry Pi, is the top face of the pie, is it facing towards that, or do you have room for a cooler?
The face is good question. The face is pointing down. So if you're concerned about heat, yeah, I'd put the little heat sinks on it.
Yeah.
One other thought was to just cut a hole in the in the board, because I specifically didn't run a bunch of traces in the middle right below the pie. So you could probably put a fan on there if you want to. I've run this like this, and you know, there's not a lot of demand on the processor. Mm-hmm. It's basically sitting there all the time. And it mainly what it's doing is it's listening for one of the GPIO pins to be pulled from the ARP controller, or there's a serial port. So it's also listening on the serial port for a command.
Sure.
And so it's idle essentially all the time. So it really doesn't, you know, it doesn't draw a lot.
I just picked up a new Pi 5 and it runs quite a bit warmer than the my old 4. So
yeah, that's a good point then. For that, you know, you'd probably want to, you know, maybe look at cooling it.
Yeah.
Now the other option too, by the way, the connection to the Pi, you don't need to use a Pi, and you don't need to put on this board, because the connection to the Pi is either just a GPIO pull that comes off of the board, or the serial interconnect between the boards. There's an I2C bus, and there's also an RS-485 bus, and the easiest way to control it is over the RS-485 bus. So you could take any PC that you've got, like a NUC or a tower or a blade or whatever you got, and you could just stick a USB to 45 dongle into it and take the two wires and just screw it into the terminal on the motherboard, and you're hooked up to it. And so it doesn't even have to be on there.
Does it allow it to be fit on a standard 1U rack?
Yeah. The board will be... The width of the board is less than 16 inches. So a 1U chassis box is about 17 inches. And so the board has to be less than that. So the board's 15, actually, I think it's 15 inches wide.
Wonderful.
So in terms of the design, sorry, Ryan, I assume you've coded all the firmware and everything for it. Is it, you know, is it all controllable over like a web interface? How are you managing, you know, something like that in general?
To do configuration.
Yeah, correct. So there's
So there's a serial port that goes through the 485 interface, and so you can take your laptop and again a little 485 dongle, two wires connect to the bus, and now you have it's a serial port control, so command line essentially. Okay. You could write a little program to send a bunch of macros and things like that, but all of the configuration commands come through the serial port.
Got it. Okay.
So I think this concept is wonderful. You know, there's so many areas in our country where the outdoor wilderness, we all like to go play and explore and everything. And I think this is, you know, very well thought through. Where do you go next in order to promote this concept and this idea?
So I haven't been trying to over promote it because I wanted to get all the hardware working to have a proof of concept. Where there are people actually, I haven't even figured out really how's the hardware going to be distributed, because I'm not sure if I'm just going to make boards available or have assembled units. I think it depends on what the demand is. So if people want to build their own hardware, that's great. You know, or I'll probably provide hardware in one form or another. So I would say that up to now, it's mostly been word of mouth, where like, you know, Josh pinged me and said, hey, that's interesting. Let's talk about it. Same thing on the workbench. You know, I haven't been talking about it too much. So I've done, you know, half a dozen different like club presentations to talk about the idea. And as much as anything else, see if people are interested. You know, sometimes you come up with an idea and you think like, I think this is a great idea, but am I the only person, you know, that thinks it's a great idea? And, you know, you're kidding yourself. But I've gotten a lot of serious interest. In fact, even here in the Oregon, I've got several repeater owners who've expressed interest to the point that they're starting to point out, well, like, what if we have several repeaters running this thing and someone hits the information button and are 10 repeaters going to light up and be, you know, clogging the same frequency? And like, ooh, that's a good problem. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. So there's been quite a bit of interest. So I think once I finish off the final version of all the boards, which is probably in a few months, then I'll start doing more promotion of this idea. But there's a website, so there's adventureradio.info that you can go to, and that's where I publish all of the specs.
Excellent. Oh, that's great.
No, and, I would imagine. Sorry, I would imagine, right, that getting outdoor enthusiasts to program, you know, four or five preset frequencies with the PL tones into their radios, that's a no-brainer, right? It's on my to-do list, right? I'm big into ice fishing, ATVing, hunting, fishing, camping, anything outdoors. I love it, and especially up here, 9 times out of 10, cell phones aren't an option. So I've always got my radio, and I'll do channel one, 14652, and I'll do channel 2446, and you know, just kind of try and monitor both. But this really is a no-brainer, right? If you're an avid outdoorsman, it's easy. Just throw these, you know, four or five frequencies into your radio. They're there. You can scan them if you want. Don't scan them if you don't want. So my question for you is the infrastructure where you're going to have the biggest roadblocks?
Yeah. So I think the secret to a happy life is low expectations. And the reason I say that is that I think in every part of the country, there should be at least a few repeaters who implement this. And it's not for everybody, and that's fine. But there should be one or two high-level repeaters or some repeaters in every region that do this. Trying to convince a bunch of hams to agree on anything is a fool's errand. And I honestly don't, I've sort of been around ham radio stuff long enough to know that I could spend the rest of my life trying to convince people to build this into the repeater. And I really don't need that frustration because, right, you know, either people get the idea and go, yes, we're going to go do that. Or like, tell me again, like, are you still doing that? And so I'm really not overly concerned about pushing that and trying to achieve that. Frankly, if the only thing that we achieve by this is we get people to program this frequency and a couple of these tones in their radio to just chat simplex and there's zero infrastructure, that's fine by me. I mean, we'll be ahead of the game at that point. I think we'll have achieved the base goal right there. So I think that's fine. Now, having said that, I think it would be a very big missed opportunity if we don't try to get these kind of systems in some repeaters in areas, especially where there's active outdoorsy activity. So I think where it makes the most sense is where we have a lot of active outdoor ham radio operators like yourself. You know, it's really going to be a groundswell thing. Like when I start talking about this here in Oregon, well, guess what? There's a whole lot of people that do a lot of outdoorsy stuff in Oregon. I mean, that's one reason we live here. And so the local soda guys were like, that's a great idea. When's that gonna, is that on the air yet? You know,
right.
So I mean, I can see pull in certain regions pretty quickly. And I think what's going to happen is it'll be someone who is like, hey, you know, I'm pretty active outdoor, you know, whether it's hiking or four-wheeling or whatever. And this would be a great project for our club who have a repeater. And let's just make this happen. And I think it'll just happen organically. But I'm not going to lose sleep over not happening. But I sure hope it does.
So, George, I had just a question going back to the repeater. So the repeater, like our repeater would be using our repeater, but your board there would then monitor that frequency. And then how would it notify the repeater that someone was trying to make a emergency call?
Yeah, so it could be done a couple different ways. So for example, one option is the controller itself can be set to do a couple different things. One is it could be set to pass audio or not pass audio from the receiver. It could also generate its own tones to send to the repeater. So if I'm on the user side, one option is, you know, we're chit-chatting and all of a sudden a third voice shows up unannounced. And then like, well, you know, maybe that's a guy in the computer. You know, where's it come from? Now, what I would do is I would configure it so that when that guy's carrier drops on the 2-meter receiver, it inserts a special tone. So I know that, oh, that's coming in from that port. So that's an emergency call. So that's another option. Another option is you can also have the repeater controller light up the repeater and send a tone, but not pass audio. And then you as the control operator or user of the repeater would have to go in and DTMF connect to that remote base radio. Any of those things, it's by policy of what you want to do more than anything else.
So let's say Eric and I were talking on the repeater and then you had an emergency, you go in on your frequency, it connects into the board. And then let's say we had the audio, we would then, even though we're talking on the one frequency, we would then hear you talking on the other and saying, I need help.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
That's right. So what happens is you think about, your repeater has a receiver and transmitter, and now there's this other radio, which has a receiver and transmitter, but it never is duplex. It's only, it's half duplex. It's only receiving or transmitting. So what's going to happen is you guys are chit-chatting on the repeater, and then the 2 meter ARP radio lights up, connects the audio through, and so it mixes the audio together. So essentially you have an audio mixer that takes your repeater receiver audio and the ARP 2 meter repeater or 2 meter remote base audio, mixes them together and sends that audio to your transmitter. So there has to be a way to mix that audio in. And that's one of the other, I didn't mention it here, but that's one of the other, if you use like my Sierra radio system, repeater controllers are multi-ported controllers and they're built to be able to handle this sort of thing naturally. So you can plug in another board and you get another port in the mixer. But I'm also going to build a little inexpensive board that lets you just intercept the receive audio and mix in another audio source and send that to the transmitter. I mean, it's a very simple circuit.
No, I mean, it sounds awesome because if there was an emergency and people are just rag chewing on a repeater, they can get in, you know, it's kind of like breaking in and then we don't have to actually be on that frequency. The frequency that, because a lot of people around here, they have their repeaters. Our club has a repeater and it's used by all of us, you know, throughout the day. We do a nightly net. So like, let's say there was an emergency on the net and someone reached it and said, hey, we're stuck up on one of our local mountains. That would be amazing to be able to do that. Cause then right then and there, you could take action. You wouldn't have to be monitoring that frequency. It's on a frequency that everyone uses. So yeah, that's a brilliant idea. I mean, I'm totally on board.
And Todd, like the nice thing is like you can have different kinds of behavior. Like for example, in the repeater controllers that we build, it's a separate thing. You can have a remote based radio and like by default, that port is shut off. So we're chit-chatting on our UHF repeater. We don't hear 2 meters. If we want to listen on 2 meters, we would turn that port on in receive only. Now I can listen to their 2 meter chatter, but we can still talk on UHF and they'll never hear us because I'm in receive only, or I punch in a DTMF code. It enables the transmitter on 2 meters. And now when I go in on UHF, I also come out on 2 meters. So depending on the repeater controller, if it's a fancy one, then you could do all those things. If you have like a inexpensive single port baby repeater controller, which many people do, then you have to take a little bit different tack because you have to add a mixer in that audio chain. And then everything else is handled on my board, except intercepting the audio. So that's the only thing you have to really modify.
I mean, it's really like you could actually do anything. I mean, you could even have, if someone reached in and you didn't want the audio, you could even have an alert.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
And then go to that tone. So it's well thought out. I think it's great. I mean, around here, I mean, we've had a couple of lost hikers. We had a hiker up in up north. Yeah, he just recently, unfortunately, passed away. Avid hiker. He hiked, he was known for hiking 3 major trails, like the Appalachian Trail and some out west. But he got lost or cold, and he ended up, unfortunately, dying. But it would have been really good if he was able to reach out on a ham radio to a local repeater that's being used, you know, on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, there's tons of use for it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now, is there? I assume based off the scalability of how you wrote the protocol and whatnot, that you really can kind of, you know, go beyond per se the basics of just like just being on a repeater. Although I love the fact that you're giving more power back to the repeater for folks to be able to do more things with it than just be a general chit chat type, you know, device. Because, you know, growing up, I remember very much the repeater used to be the hub of everything and people would, you know, would gather around it like it was the, you know, the family campfire per se. And so that's kind of faded a bit. And now you're kind of bringing that back to the foreground, and most people are just really looking at this. So my question, I guess, would be is that you obviously have the capabilities to be able to expand, per se, like into the all-star worlds and other, you know, kind of digital modes and stuff like that. Does your current spec have the capabilities to, say, passing that information off into, you know, the other types of networks, so you kind of broaden your reach?
Yeah, that's why I'm building the three-port motherboard, because I want to be able to take that remote receiver transceiver on 2 meters and be able to either connect it to a repeater or connect it to the internet. And All-Star would be a good backhaul for that. In fact, a good friend of mine, Eric, QSO Today, Eric 4Z1UG, he pinged me after he watched my thing with Josh and said, why don't you just put up remote 2 meter transceivers and All-Star and forget the repeater?
Right. Yeah, like, that's what I was thinking.
Well, that's, you know, that's a combo I hadn't really thought about, but that's totally legit. I mean, if you're going to do that, you might as well put a repeater up there too. But yeah, I mean, you can have, like, at your house, you can have a transceiver and an All-Star node and backhaul it to the internet. And if you have, you can imagine a network where you have multiple nodes hubbed together on an All-Star hub.
Yeah, network. Yep.
Then you know, you could be people could just be listening there, or you can take this. I'm also making one. You'll be able to hook up to a transceiver at your house. So, because the one thing that this does that's kind of unique is it scans for the PL tone. Normally, PL decoders, you set the tone you want to look for, and it tells you if it's there or not. The hardware in here, I didn't really talk about it, but the PL tone decoder in here scans the audio passband. And it looks for all of the, it looks for about 20 of the PL tones. And when it sees one, it tells you which one it found. Mm-hmm. So we could easily have that set up to talk to an All-Star node and send that data somewhere else. Or you can have it on the receiving end on your computer with an audio filter and scan it on your computer audio. I mean, there's like so many things you could do with this.
Yeah, it's pretty flexible. I mean, the benefit I was kind of thinking of is that at least in the New Hampshire area where we're surrounded by, like I said, White Mountains and a lot of valleys, is that there's an All-Star network that is basically, you know, designed to alleviate a lot of those needs to finding repeaters on high points and whatnot. And, you know, this would be phenomenal to be able to have everybody in that network to be able to just, you know, piggyback off of it and be, you know, able to respond to obviously emergency events. But I could see the super benefit of the POTA side of things, because I can't tell you how many times I go on 5.2 and it's like chirping, I have to like text people on Discord and other things to say, hey, you know, I'm out here on 5.2, let's make a contact, which is kind of like, you know, not the right way to do it in my mind, but it's the only way to really get people's attention, because nobody really listens to 5.2, even though all of us have it in our scans and whatnot. So yeah, this definitely it piques my interest I'm all on board, which sounds like a lot of these guys are as well.
I'm sorry, didn't mean to interrupt you.
I was just going to say, in ham radio workbench nomenclature, it's like, take my money, but yeah, no. <It's> like,
right. Well, yeah. So one of the use cases that I think is very specific to wilderness radio stuff is there may be infrastructure out there like a fire lookout or a ski lodge or, you know, whatever that is in a great location. And for whatever reason, we don't have a repeater there. Now, it'd be great if we had a repeater, but like if you went to this, you know, the ski lodge people and say, we want to put a repeater on the top of your ski run, they're like, you know, okay, that you need a building and power and, you know, but if you can go in there with a 2 meter transceiver and this little controller and you could, and a Raspberry Pi, and you could Wi-Fi that somewhere. And yep. Now you have a remote transceiver, not just receiver, but transceiver. So, you know, you could be sitting at home and you get an alert that, hey, someone's on the emergency tone. You could just, you know, through All-Star route to that remote transceiver and chit chat with them, you know, live on the radio. So to me, like that sort of use case, I think is interesting, because that's a case where you don't even have to rely on repeater infrastructure. You can use other, you know, you could be at the bottom of a valley. But if the Forest Service building is at the bottom of the valley where there's a visitor center, you can stick one there, you know? Yeah. I mean, and we're not talking about let's wheel in a 6-foot rack, you know, it's like it's a package that's about that big. Yep. You don't need a whole lot. Put it at your house.
Yeah, this is very cool. Yeah.
So So anyway, that's the idea.
Cool. All right. Well, so any other questions you guys kind of want to throw at George there? I know obviously we could go for hours, and we obviously aren't to the level and the advanced complexities of a ham radio workbench. We all definitely expire after a certain time, and we definitely want to be good with George's time there. So, is there any other kind of last minute things you want to share with us, George, about the adventure protocol or anything? Kind of obviously maybe to the boards themselves, as if I was, ready to, pass the money over to you. Are you ready to do that, or kind of where's that in its process?
Yeah, I'm not really ready for that yet. I want to make sure it's all, built and debugged and I've deployed it a bit and tested it out before I give it to people, because I don't want to create a big support nightmare.
Understood.
So the thing to do is follow along on our website. It's adventureradio.info, and that's where I'll be publishing all the information about this. And we'll be talking about it on the Ham Radio Workbench podcast from time to time. But the quickest way to get the info is just to go to adventureradio.info. Guess is I'm hoping to have either boards or assembled units mid this year at the latest. Wow. Boards for sure, probably in Q2. If we do assembled things, it'll probably be Q2 to Q3.
All right. Cool. Very cool. Well, I definitely think, Ryan, do you have anything to add, or are you?
No, this is exciting, and I want to circle back and just say congratulations on the 200th episode.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, we love doing it. So thanks.
Yeah, and any of our listeners have not heard Ham Radio Workbench's podcast, definitely they'll be in our show notes, a link to their website and the how to subscribe. It is way over my head in terms of my pay grade, but I advise it highly to go in there and listen. All four guys there are great. I love every bit of it. When I love to listen, and as their motto says, you can definitely mow acreage of lawns in a short amount of time when listening to the Ham Radio podcast. So Ham Radio Workbench podcast. So, with one final thing, George, what's the easiest way to obviously people reach out to you if they want to learn more about this, or if they're repeat owners that want to be able to get more info on this? What's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, there's a form on the adventureradio.info website where you can leave a message, and so that'd be a great way to get me. You can also email me through my Pactena site, so you can send email to george@pactena.com, and there's also a form there you can leave questions on the Pactena website.
Awesome. Okay. Well, as always, thank you for joining the Live Free and Ham podcast community. Remember, you can always, if you haven't subscribed to us, you definitely should. And as always, you can always go to our shop as we're adding stuff daily to that. So if you want to get the typical swag or stickers or t-shirts, you want to make sure you check that out because it's getting updated weekly. And you can always connect to our show by making sure you like and subscribe and share and make sure everybody else knows about Live Free and Ham. Check out our social medias for latest podcasts, latest info, shows, and content. And as always, you can always head over to our Discord and join in the conversation more, obviously, on this show or any of our other shows. And lastly, you can always support our show through Patreon or buy us a beer links in our show notes, as everything helps us and helps the show. And as always, lastly, if you want to contact any of our hosts, the contact information is found on our website at livefreeandham.com. And as always, thanks again for listening to all of us. And from all of us, Live Free and Ham, 73.
73.
73, guys.
73.